While the Rangers slept, the Alamo scouts were crouched in the shadows a little over a mile to the south, watching as the long column of Japanese vehicles trundled past the camp on Highway 5. The scouts rotated their watch through the night, and periodically one of them would run back to Platero and report to Musi. The sobering moonlight vigil graphically validated the colonel's decision to postpone the raid. All evening, the Japanese kept coming. Tanks, trucks, and thousands of foot soldiers, a staunchless stream of men and materiel, hastening toward Bongaben and points north. By dawn, the flow of traffic finally ran dry, and the road was clear again. The Emperor's army had passed with the night. It was now the morning of Tuesday, January 30th, and the scouts had a series of complex and difficult tasks to carry out. Within a few hours, they absolutely had to supply all the reconnaissance data Musi and Prince so desperately needed in order to finish planning the raid, which was scheduled for dusk. Gleaning these details would not be any easier than it had been 24 hours previously. The transient Japanese troops from Kabanatuan City may have moved on, but there were still some 75 armed guards inside the compound, and perhaps 200 or 300 soldiers staying in the camp barracks. The compound was fortified with pillboxes and guard towers, manned by machine gunners. The terrain was an agoraphobe's nightmare, flat, dry savanna unfurling in all directions. The scouts were able to assemble certain nuggets of information based on the observations of Filipino guerrillas, who could easily don straw hats and civilian garb and skirt around the edges of camp in the natural guise of the rice peasants they actually were. Pahota's intelligence aide, Lieutenant Tombo, had his men snooping all over the place, taking measurements, pacing off distances. But there was still vital intelligence missing, and by the forenoon the scouts were beginning to despair of their chances of gathering any of it. Then Lieutenant Bill Nellist had a thought. If the scouts couldn't draw up close to the camp, then perhaps they could at least find a higher vantage point. Earlier in the day, Nellist had spotted a lone nipa shack standing out in the rice fields to the north of the compound. The one-room shack, which appeared to be abandoned, was situated a few hundred yards from the camp and was conveniently aligned with the main gate, almost dead-on, in fact. Since it was constructed on stilts, the shack promised just enough elevation to enable the scouts to peer down into the camp enclosure. It didn't seem like much, but out there on the griddle of grass, every vertical inch could discernibly improve the sight lines. Getting over to the shack was the problem. They'd surely be spotted and shot if they hoofed it all the way over there in their scout uniforms. So Nellist asked a Filipino runner to go fetch 2 broad-brimmed buri hats and some farmer clothes. They were going to try to disguise themselves as locals. It was decided that Private Rufo Vaquilar, an Alamo scout who happened to be a Filipino-American, would accompany Nellist to the shack. Soon the runner materialized with farmer costumes, and the 2 scouts quickly pulled on their new clothes and hats. Nellist eased his M1 rifle down his pant leg with the barrel pointing toward the ground. He'd have to lurch over there as though he were wearing a knee splint. The limp would look suspicious, but at least his weapon would be concealed from the tower guards. Nellist and Vaquilar shoved off. They walked down Highway 5 for a few hundred yards, then emerged onto the broad field right in front of the camp. Taking slightly different paths about 100 yards apart from each other, they shambled over to the nipa hut, in full view of the Japanese sentries. Nervously, the 2 scouts scrambled up the old bamboo ladder into the stifling heat of the shack. They felt sure their little ruse must have attracted notice among the guards. Nellist and Vaquilar lay on the slatted bamboo floor for a few interminable minutes, hyperventilating, listening anxiously for the report of a long-range rifle or the shout of approaching Japanese. There was an old rocking chair by the open window. Nellist extricated his M1 from his pant leg and crept over to the chair. Staying low, he sat down and stole a glimpse of the prison stockade. To his relief, nothing seemed untoward. The camp was quiet. The Japanese must have bought the disguise. Encouraged, Lieutenant Nellist peered out the window again, this time taking the full measure of things. A smile soon spread over his face. The vantage was even more commanding than he'd expected. The entire camp was spread out before him, a puzzle waiting to be solved. He could see prisoners ambling about the compound and could even count the guards up in the towers. He could discern the general logic of the place, the relationships among the various buildings, the layout of the paths and service roads. Details the scouts had only been guessing at were now apparent to him, as if he were perched on a ladder, grasping the design of an English hedge maze that, at ground level, had seemed inscrutable.